This is the SF Signal Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Patrick Hester, and I'm an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude, but not to be confused with the dude, although I have been known to bowl.
And you abide.
Mm-hmm. It is once again that time of week when you, the listener, download this, the podcast, and let us be the Q-tip slowly working its way down your ear canal to tickle your brain. That totally didn't sound quite as gross in my head, but hey, what are you going to do? This week, I have assembled some Avengers. Of course, they're from the Great Lakes region, so they're not really the A-team, but hey. Oh.
I'm the only one in... around the Great Lakes around here. Was that a crack?
Yeah, but Jeff got the joke. So that's what matters. The Great Lakes Avengers. Look it up.
Oh, Squirrel Girl. Yes,
yes. I know about
Pink Pearl and Flatman.
And what we're going to talk about tonight is the most accessible to a newbie genre reader science fiction book you have ever read. So there's your clarification, Weimer.
We'll talk about that when we get to my picks.
Yeah. And before we get started, did Fred send anybody like a huge long list?
Nope.
Okay, good.
No.
So let's go ahead and start introducing the panel this week. You've already heard two voices, so I'm going to make them wait till last. We're going to start with Kristen.
Oh.
Yeah. You're on the spot now. There's a spotlight on you. You're on the stage. People are staring at you. The lights are hot.
Are we introducing ourselves? Or?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Kristen, I am the proprietress of My Bookish Ways, and I also write for SF Signal and some other stuff.
Other stuff? There's other stuff?
Yeah, I do. I like review for Library Journal and stuff.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Do you have a website?
I do. I'm sorry, mybookishways.com.
Do you have a Twitter?
My Bookish Ways.
There's a trend here.
There is.
It's almost like it's a branding thing that you're doing there.
I know.
And so people can go to that website and go to that Twitter and see clever things that you've written.
I hope so. Yes, I hope.
And then you entertain people on Twitter, don't you?
Sometimes.
You entertain our next panelist, which is Sarah.
Yes, she entertains me. Great.
Ditto.
Yeah, so I'm Sarah. And I run Bookworm Blues, and I tweet as Bookworm Blues on Twitter, and you can find me on Facebook as Bookworm Blues. And I also run Special Needs and Strange Worlds on SF Signal.
And is there a recent Strange Needs that you're looking to push?
That was subtle.
That's me.
No, I've been working really hard to try and get my column to take off, and so I have a ton of posts lined up. I have authors going clear into the middle of June right now, and I have more coming in after.
Wow.
So just keep track of it. It should be every Tuesday, once a week.
Every Tuesday. So. Very cool.
Yep.
Next up, we have Mr. Paul.
My name's Paul Weimer. I am Prince J. Biston on Twitter. I write stuff for SF Signal. I write stuff for the Functional Nerds. I am the co-host of the Skiffy and Fanty Show, which is a podcast and a website. But you mostly can find me on Twitter, where I'm tweeting pictures, links, and just about anything and anything that comes
beautiful
to my
beautiful pictures.
Head. Thank you.
Yeah, he competes with Sarah.
Sarah is better than I am at
No, we are so not getting into this. I will fly over there and punch you in the face. I'm not. No, you're good.
There you go.
Damn it.
You heard it. It's official.
Damn it, Paul. Damn it.
Now, Paul, tell me about the Skiffy and Fanty thing. That's new, right? What's that all about?
I've actually been on Skiffy and Fanty for a couple of years now.
Why is this the first time hearing about it?
I don't know, Patrick. You don't pay attention to my Twitter feed or to anything I do, apparently.
Wow.
Unless it's for your website or for SF Signal.
No, I'm figuring you must be keeping this a secret or something. So what's it all about over there?
Skiffy and Fanty is a SF genre website and podcast that throws book reviews, interviews. We watch crazy movies and get drunk while doing so. It's the variety show of SF websites and podcasts.
Now, you said you were a co-host. Who else is on the show?
Sean Duke is its founder. Also, Jen Zink is the is technically the other co-host, but due to her buying a toy store in Florida, she hasn't been doing as much on there. We also have contributions from Mike Underwood, David Annandale, Stina Liked, all good people.
Very cool. So you said that's been going on for a couple years now?
I've been there for a couple years. It's been going on for a couple years before that.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, you shouldn't keep these things to yourself. You should tell us more about it.
I apparently should promote Skippy and Fanti every time I'm on the SF Signal podcast.
Well, I will say this. I'm aware of something called the World SF Blog Tour or something like that.
Yes. Skippy and Fanti this year has decided to go to do World SF as our theme. We've been concentrating on talking to authors from all around the world, looking at world cinema. We did an episode on the original, not with Raymond Burr, version of Godzilla, which was a lot of fun to talk about. And this year we're concentrating on authors outside of the United States, and we're having a great time doing it.
And someone's trying to go to London.
Yes. Sean Duke, the creator of Skiffy and Fanti, is trying to get to London. He's desperately trying to raise the funds because, well, he is a poor graduate student and he has no money. And you can go to skiffyandfanti.com and find out how you can donate to help Sean get to London. It would be especially a shame if we actually got nominated for Hugo and he couldn't be there to be at the Hugo ceremony.
There you go. So there's the plug.
There's the plug. Thank you, Patrick.
And see, if I hadn't drug all that out of you, sheesh. I don't know.
I'm like Taffy. You had to pull out. You just had to pull out.
He doesn't want to talk about himself ever.
I guess. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, you know, the next time y'all watch Big Lebowski, just pretend that Donnie is Patrick. It's a much funnier movie. I highly recommend it. Hi, Jeff Patterson here. I am JeffPatterson11 at Twitter. I blog at Gravity Lens, which can be found at baddaystudio.com. I am one third of the Three Horsemen, another podcast on the fine SF Signal family of podcasts. And I do believe we're going to have Paul as a guest horseman on our next recording in a few days.
Wow.
Neat.
Wow, that doesn't hurt at all.
And more importantly, Patrick, you will not be a guest.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt at all. That's not painful.
Doesn't mean that we're ruling you out completely. We just want to test the waters, and we wanted somebody of quality first.
Hold on. I gotta check if I still have admin rights on this episode. No, so give me a second here. Be horrible if that episode accidentally pointed to a different MP3.
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it?
Well, hey, thanks for everybody for coming on. This has been a great show. Have a great evening.
What? Wait, what? I'm not that drunk yet.
I only get drunk at Skippy and Fanti.
So, the most accessible to a newbie genre reader science fiction book you have ever read. Let's start with Jeff. Why don't you go first?
Wow. Okay.
Curveball. It's baseball season.
This was a very interesting question because, number one, you very rarely say science fiction without saying science fiction fantasy.
Yes, I did not say fantasy. I was very specific.
Yes. So I'm kind of torn on this one because overall genre, it would be Towing Jehovah, which was nominated for a Hugo.
Good book.
But in my excellent book, I read it when I heard him read it in 95 at ReaderCon and bought it immediately. However, in my mind, it does not qualify as a science fiction book. So I'm going to go with To Say Nothing of the Dog by Connie Willis. One of her time travel books, which also had Doomsday Book and Blackout. And I think there's another one I'm forgetting. Which is the story of some time travelers who travel back to England to recover a artifact that was in a church, and it leads to a number of screwball mishaps and misunderstandings, and it is very provincial in its comedy, and it's also very... it's kind of droll in the way it does it. It really goes out of its way to try to replicate assorted period pieces. And it was probably the only one out of her, out of the, that series, that time travel series that, that really went for laughs. I mean, that really purposely on purpose went for laughs as often as it could. However, there is, you know, time travel in this is not explained. You work for this agency in the future and you time travel to the past and you go in disguise and you have to go and you're given a mission and there's various other agents that are involved, et cetera. So in the fact that it's simply, it's very utilitarian in its plot vehicles, which is what time travel is in this particular story. And the rest of it is just trying to remember how history plays out while you interact with it. There's a lot of books that do similar things, but that was the one that, to me, because of the fact that it was an excellent homage to Twain and a lot of other writers of the period, that gets my vote.
What about it, though, made it accessible to, like, for a new genre reader? What makes
because
it accessible?
Because, number one, with the exception of the fact that these people are from the future, which basically happens at the beginning of the book and a very little bit in the middle, it's that's the only real science fictional part of it.
So it's the, like a show on the channel formerly known as Sci-Fi.
Yes. But it's a comedy of errors, and there's a lot of, you know, it's got a bit of romantic comedy that goes on in it as well, and it plays on a lot of different tropes. And on top of that, it's actually a pretty big book. There's a lot of storylines that go on in it. And if this book, if you stripped away all of its the science fiction that is in it, you would still have a pretty solid story. You know, if you remove the time travelers, the story that actually goes on is a pretty compelling story to start with.
What was this your first Connie Willis?
Oh no.
Okay, so you had read other Connie Willis before.
I had read a ton of other Connie Willis.
Okay.
And I had been a huge fan of her short stuff, and when Doomsday Book had come out a couple of years before, I loved it. I loved Doomsday Book to death. So when this one came out, I sort of went into it expecting more of that, and what I got was something that really had me laughing out loud quite a bit. So.
Hmm. Now, Jeff, are you going to have Jen come on and tell us why GPS sucks and shouldn't be trusted?
I can probably twist her arm. You can read all about that at Consumer Affairs. So.
See, Paul, I pay attention to Twitter.
Yes, you do. I also have a bumper sticker on the back of my car. Don't follow me. I'm following my GPS. Because it's led me astray on many occasions.
Oh, you know, it's kind of funny. I'm talking about an article that Jeff's wife wrote, and it just reminded me of when I was on the road. This was like 99, 2000, 2001, 2002. I would have to find these little warehouses out in the middle of nowhere in Kentucky and in Indiana and in different places. And so I would set up my week, and I would go to MapQuest, because Google didn't have maps yet. I would go to MapQuest and I would print out all these maps with all these instructions. And if I was in a hurry, I wasn't paying that much attention. And there would always eventually be one or two in the mix for the week that when I was looking through these printed pages, I would be following the directions and I didn't see that the very last thing said, this zip code could not be found. We are taking you to the center of town.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that was always fun. So anyway, Kristen.
Oh, I have a few. How many you want?
Go with the first one, like the most, the one. There can be only one.
There are a couple, but I think probably the first one for me was Grimspace by Anna Geary. Is that how you say her last name?
I don't know. Paul?
I'm Paul, actually not right? familiar with this. I'm actually not familiar with this author offhand, so
I don't know how to pronounce it. H-E-U-I-R-R-E.
Oh, Anna Gary, yeah. Anna Gary,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
You were just pronouncing it odd, yeah.
It's the Grim Space is the first of a series that stars Sarantha Jax, and she can jump in space, basically. And
but we can all jump in space.
We can all jump in space. She has a gene that she can jump through Grim Space. Okay.
Okay.
And she's really damaged, and she's really, she starts out the series as kind of a wild child, and there is romance, but it's not the traditional kind. It's just, it's very sci-fi. I think it's been accused before of not being sci-fi, but it definitely qualifies because it's a space, kind of a space opera.
Okay. But what about it makes it accessible?
Because there's not, I used to be afraid of stuff that was dubbed. My husband reads a lot of hard sci-fi, and I would try and always kind of feel a little, left behind with some of the science.
Oh yeah.
And there's a lot of science in it, but it's just presented in a way that just a very accessible way. And also I think because of the very strong female character that it, it can serve as sort of a gateway drug for a female audience.
Okay.
And then, you might, cause it was the start of making me want to read stuff that was definitely more in the harder sci-fi territory.
Okay. Well, so far we haven't knocked anything off of Paul's list. So why don't you give me the second book?
The second one would be probably one I read lately was The Martian by Andy Weir.
Okay.
And that's, I've read a lot before that, but there is a lot of science in The Martian. Have you read The Martian?
No, but I've heard a lot of good things about it. It was actually Brian Staveley's pick over on the Functional Nerds this week or last week.
It's amazing. It's amazing. It's one of those that I couldn't say anything negative about. It's funny because the main character is so relatable. He's stuck on Mars, but he has a sense of humor and he makes jokes about his situation. It's told in kind of a diary format, except for ground, mission control. And there's tons of science. There's a science of, how much potatoes he's going to need to, how many potatoes he's going to need to grow in order to survive for how long, how to build his habitat. But it is done in a kind of a humorous way. And it's almost like hearing somebody's thoughts because of the diary format. That's probably the most science I've read and I couldn't put it down.
Okay. All right.
And then one more. I had like six, but
one more.
The Darwin Elevator by Jason M. Huff, which is a trilogy.
Yes.
And it has what makes it accessible for me is it's definitely sci-fi. I mean, you have it's a First Contact series. And you have a space elevator, which is about as sci-fi as it gets. But you have this plague. And this plague reverts people back to their base instincts. Some people laugh a lot. Most people get really hungry. So there's kind of a zombie element, but they're not zombies.
Yeah, but see, when you say that, I just remember the episode where Buffy is in college and she's drinking the beer that makes them all turn into Cro-Mags. And she's sitting there going, beer, bad.
Kind of. Yeah. No, it's just, it would definitely appeal to people that like zombie fiction too, because you have that sort of dread, because there's an aura around these space elevators that as long as you stay within that aura, you're not going to get sick. And then you have immunes, which most of the main characters are immunes. But it's the danger that lies beyond the aura, that really makes a lot of fun.
Well, and I don't want to influence people, but I'll say that so far two of the authors that have been mentioned I have met and are horribly, horribly nice people, and that would be Connie Willis and Jason Huff.
Jason Huff is awesome.
He's very, very kind. Yes. And Connie, I did not know until I met her, but apparently huge Primeval fan. Huge Primeval fan. It's like an obsession with her.
But I guess unless you want to hear the rest real quick, then I guess.
I think we're going to move on because you got three, and that's more than I'm going to give Paul. I mean, he's going to be lucky if I even let him get half of one out. So let's go to Sarah first, because I'm trying to knock some books off of Paul's list just to torture him.
It's like whack-a-mole.
So I've kind of had this situation come up with friends recently where they've wanted to try reading the kind of stuff that I read. So I've been recommending books to people who have never stepped into the genre before. So this is very thematically appropriate for my life. But there were a few that I've kind of recommended to everyone. And in the process of telling people to read things, I've learned that it depends on what they like to read in the first place. So if, there are some that I've recommended to everyone. One of the things about science fiction that people automatically assume is that it's a genre that people fly on airplanes and go through space and battle aliens, and there's lots of lasers, but no thought. And that really bugs me, because I think one of the coolest things about speculative fiction is that it can really make you think about things totally differently. And in that respect, I've been telling everybody to read — this one's not going to surprise anybody — but I've been telling everyone to read two books, Love Minus 80 by Will McIntosh and The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood. And both of those books, The Handmaid's Tale, I guess some people don't consider that sci-fi. I do, but whatever. They're both very thought-provoking. They're both kind of uncomfortable. They both play with social themes. They both have science fiction elements. And everyone that I've told to read them who's never read science fiction before has come away with a different idea of the kind of stuff that science fiction people write. And that's cool to me. So those two right off the bat for that. And then a series for people who want to kind of get into the space opera, big long series, big book things, I recommend to them the Four Kosigan saga. I guess I'm saying that right. You'll forgive me if I'm not. That I've only read one book, one and a half, so I'm not very, very equipped to talk about it much. But the series itself starts fairly small with a love story that just branches into this complete, fascinating political and personal struggle that is just the cornerstone of almost everyone's sci-fi library. And I just think if you want to get into the space opera, that would be a very comfortable place to start. So there you go.
Very cool. All right, Paul, did we knock anything else off of your list?
I have plenty of stuff, but like Sarah, I came across thinking about this question of who am I recommending this book for? Where are they coming from?
I was thinking that too, but I didn't address it. Yeah.
And I got very different answers depending on who am I recommending this book for. So I'm going to go with the first one on my list, which is the person who goes to see blockbusters and movie theaters but doesn't read science fiction. And that person should not pass go and go immediately and pick up Leviathan Wakes by James S. A. Corey. Solar System space opera. The SF is not very hard, but it is much more focused on the action and the adventure and the play of the characters as they bounce around the solar system trying to get a handle on the trigger happy war that's going on, not to mention the alien artifact and technology. And it's very accessible. There are science fiction elements, but we're introduced to them with relative ease. I think anybody who's watched the Avengers or any thrill a minute blockbuster can hook into this series and get themselves booted right into space opera and go on from there. It's not like you're handing them, say, The Quantum Thief, which any first time science fiction author is going to bounce off of hard. But from there, you can go any number of ways. Like I'll go completely out of left field pick. And what about the literary fiction person who reads literary fiction and wants to try science fiction but isn't quite sure? And I'm not sure I would normally think, oh, maybe I'll give them Samuel Delaney, but I think that might not be the right my move. Jeff, I don't want them to hate me. I'd go with something very good and much more accessible, and that would be The Speed of Dark by Elizabeth Moon.
The Speed of Dark
tells the story of Lou Arendelle, who is an autistic man who is offered a cure for his autism. Is this what he really wants? And it really explores that tension. The trait that is in some ways a detriment really defines who and what he is, and the struggle whether he wants to actually take this cure propels you through the novel. So there's not a lot of science fiction, but it's a hard science fiction, but it's a lot of social science fiction and the implications of a technology. And I thought of this, Jeff, when we were talking about deafness and deafness culture, and I am pretty sure Elizabeth Moon was keying right into that same sort of idea about curing deafness and making a parallel between that and curing autism. Shall I continue, Patrick? I have plenty more.
That's two. You get one more.
Okay. How about the Game of Thrones reader who wants to read science fiction but has never read science fiction before but loves reading epic fantasy?
The fully annotated Dune.
I want to go something more modern than Dune. And that would be Bright of the Sky by Kay Kenyon.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, well, it's very much science fantasy. The science fiction elements in Bright of the Sky, which is about a pilot who, 20 years after leaving it, returns to the universe which sits alongside ours, is very much a fantasy universe with fantasy cultures and creatures running around. But there's world engines. There's a plot to destroy our own universe. It's clearly science fiction, but it feels for long stretches much like a very elaborate fantasy with different factions moving their pieces across the chessboard. And it's a fabulous series that hasn't gotten enough attention. And here's my chance to plug it some more. So there's my three books to start.
Can I chime in something there?
Yes. Sure. You mean beyond the ooh.
Well, no, that's just because I never really considered that a particularly accessible book. However, Paul's point is something that I wanted to address, and that is, once again, it depends on who this target person is. I mean, if somebody has read, you know, a lot of Stephen King, especially the really big Stephen King novels that are ensemble pieces, I'm going to push them to Peter F. Hamilton, because he writes very similarly structured stories, even though his big books, you know, even though like Pandora's Star is not necessarily going to be considered accessible, you know, it's playing on the same scope of playground, wherein if somebody has been watching Game of Thrones, or even, you know, if we hope they've actually read the books because they like the show, I would throw them at Seven Sons by Kevin Anderson.
That's a good choice.
Which
really?
Yes,
I think you threw that at me, and I've been meaning to throw it back at you.
because no, but that's a book that once again,
it's a pain in the ass.
Huh?
It's a pain in the ass.
Why is it a pain in the ass?
It's so dense.
It is. It's incredibly dense, as are the George R. R. Martin books.
But see, I don't feel that way. I can sit down with an epic fantasy, and I can just blow through it in a weekend. But I can't do that with Saga of the Seven Sons. I think it's still sitting on my shelf because I read the first couple of chapters.
My point is this. I'm talking to Paul here, Patrick.
Okay. Hey, this is like Twitter. I can interject myself in any conversation I want.
Yes,
it is on.
But that was the point I was trying to make. And like other things that I've been thinking about, like like, you know, Beggars in Spain or White Plague or Blood Music, you know, books that are by all means working off a very central, possibly inaccessible science fiction idea, but they're not telling what a lot of people consider traditional science fiction stories. They're talking about, a plague and the impact it has on politics, or it's talking about, you know, the whole idea of the Sleepless from the Beggars series. I mean, you know, that's just once you get deeper into the books or it becomes much more science fictional, you may lose a few. But that first book, definitely, if you say, yeah, this is a book about suddenly we've developed children that never go to sleep and this is the impact it has on the world. Yeah, that's going to perk someone's ears up.
Agreed. That wasn't on my list, but it should have. Beggars in Spain should have been on my list since it fits in that same space. Absolutely.
You know, there's a lot of science fiction though that never really gets talked about, and I'm not saying that it's like a bad thing, but science fiction, and even I do this, and I've been reading, I don't even know how many books, but.
182 last year, I believe, or 84.
I read a damn load of books, and it's I think of science fiction and I automatically go to like spaceships and lasers and epic battles, but there are so many sci-fi books out there that are just a lot softer than that. That, like, for example, any of Sharon Lynn Fisher's books that she's releasing, the Ophelia yep. Prophecy and Ghost Planet, romantic sci-fi.
That I'm would expecting totally that review speak, tomorrow, Sarah.
That would totally speak to a paranormal romance reader, and they would probably never even really think of it. Mm-hmm. And you'll have the review, I promise.
No, on Sarah's note, she's right. And that's kind of where I was coming from with mine. You know, because Paul did bring up a really good point. Who are you recommending for? And I was recommending for me before I started writing or before uh-huh. I started reading science fiction. So, yes, where, you know, Sarah's saying, you know, Sharon Lynn Fisher stuff would possibly appeal to somebody that might be interested in romance and you know, with a romantic angle, they might enjoy reading her stuff.
A lot of readers who look at science fiction might automatically be intimidated by a lot of the concepts. And there's so many books out there that aren't intimidating, but mm-hmm. automatically those are the ones that we talk about. We talk about the big, huge, you know, yes. Peter F. Hamilton books and the this and then that, but we tend to overlook the more subtle stories that would appeal to a wider range of people, I guess is okay. all I'm saying.
I agree. I agree completely. And if you're going to talk romance, I got to throw out Silver Metal Lover by Tanith Lee and just about anything by Catherine O'Sara.
She is great anyway. She's a very well-rounded writer.
mm-hmm. Well, now I'm going to throw you guys a curveball.
Okay.
So is it better if you're trying to bring someone into genre for the first time and let's say they do like movies and TV, you know, they have watched JJ Trek and they thought it was the most original thing they'd ever seen. Now, is that the person that you're going to hand them a novel, or would it be better to hand them a mixtape? An anthology.
You know, that's not a bad idea.
Well, no. I mean, you think about it. When I remember when I was, you know, my brother says when I started to get interesting was when I started listening to different kinds of music. And what other people would
You're
do
interesting?
Is, yeah, shut
Could
up.
Could you talk to my husband, please?
what people would do is they would give me mixtapes. And then I would go out and I would buy a lot of collections of different things. So, for example, when I really got into the blues, I would go and I would buy like the House of Blues CDs. I would buy Blues A to Z. I got the Scorsese blues album, you know, all these kind of, to get all these different groups to figure out what it was that I liked and what I didn't like and what I wanted to listen to and what I didn't want to listen to. Isn't that kind of what an anthology is all about?
Yeah, but the short stories can be so different.
Different, you know, good or different bad?
They're just so different from novels. I don't know. I think it's a good idea. I know that I'm not a huge reader of short stories.
I ran into this kind of issue with my husband. He doesn't read books to save his life. He won't do it. He will not read a book. He's a gamer, and he's very visual, and he's very into that stuff.
Get him a Halo book.
I've tried everything.
Hold on. You give him a book about Master Chief, he's going to read the book.
The one thing that has ended up working for him is graphic novels. And I think it's because my husband is a very visual person and graphic novels are a very visual medium. And I can't get into graphic novels at all.
I can't either.
We totally fly past each other in that. But he'll read graphic novels until the cows come home.
But he will not read a novel. If only, Sarah, there was somewhere out on the internet, somehow associated with Kirkus, where someone was writing a twice monthly column about science fiction graphic novels. If only that existed.
If only.
I know. If only I knew that person.
I've been paying attention to it, Patrick.
Yes, that exists. I write it.
We know.
Hey, can I, if you're going to throw a mixtape at somebody, one anthology that I would hand just about anybody who's interested in SF, especially in the non-space opera SF, would be the anthology Shine, which was edited by Jetsy DeVries, and I want to say it came out in 2008, although I could be wrong. It is an anthology of near-future optimistic science fiction is what the subtitle of it was, and it had Alistair Reynolds.
I did a mind meld on that. I might have to pick that one up. Optimistic Futures. Yes.
Yeah. Madeline Ashby. Kay Kenyon was in it. Awesome. Jason Stoddard. Lavi Tidar. Yeah. It's a really good. Hold on. Let me check the date on that. It was 2010. It came out, and it came out. It was a Solaris anthology.
Well, and see, I'm wondering if anthologies wouldn't work for couples as well. You know, if you had a couple and one was into romance, the other one was into zombies, you could give them Rigor Mortis. If
Wow. That might make for some interesting conversation.
Every time I mention that anthology, somewhere in the world, Jame Gates gets a tick in the back of the neck. And she's like, he's talking about it.
Yeah. Something else that just leaps to mind. I really wish John was here because the whole idea of SF Signal doing like a live couples counseling podcast where we all recommend books for them would be a really good idea.
What were you going to say, Paul?
I'm not sure about recommending anthologies, and here's why. Not to rain on the parade. Novels are omnipresent in our society. You go into a bookstore in an airport and you see them, you pick one up, you read them on the airplane. The exposure to the short stories once people leave college is pretty limited. So I'm not sure that handing them an anthology is necessarily the right way to go because they probably haven't read any short fiction in years and years and years where they might have read a Dan Brown or a Game of Thrones or some other novel. It might be, as Kristen was saying, it might be a form problem. It's like they're not used to reading short stories, and that might itself might be a barrier.
So then you would recommend that person, Paul, like Deaver's Carte Blanche 007 novel?
No.
Here's the thing. I don't know. I can't believe that no one mentioned, like, the Babylon 5 tie-in novel, Final Reckoning, The Fate of Bester.
You don't know, Patrick, because that might have been on my list, but you wouldn't let me read the rest of my list. So you'll never know if I was going to recommend
If I had you read all of them, you wouldn't have anything to comment on in the comments, in the posts,
in the comment section. You'll never know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something, you know, it's funny that you say that because... Yeah. Strangely enough, out of all the books, out of all the Vab 5 tie-in books, that was probably one of the ones that I thought really gave you a great investment in the character of Bester. But that brings me to my point, which is, you know, the goal here is, okay, what are the hooks that we are putting into our marks as we do our little...
As we reel them in.
Right.
Yes.
And, and investment in the character A, or investment in character or characters A, and B, investment in the idea. You know, it's been called literature of ideas for a reason, and that is that if you're just going to do a, ooh, these are ships flying through space shooting at each other, well, you know, you can do that in a number of different genres, just change the medium that the vessels are traveling through. But if you're actually going to, you know, attack an idea head on, which we are seeing in movies, which we're seeing, you know, more and more, you know, creeping into the mainstream as technology changes. But there are a lot of ideas that really haven't been touched, you know, movie and mainstream wise that are sitting out there. And I think that if you take a very compelling character and put them in the face of a technology or sociological change or a truth that is discovered, that is compelling enough, you know, the book sells itself.
Well,
so in that regard, I can see Paul's argument against doing short stories because, you know, character investment is something that you really need a novel for the most part.
Well, and Paul is also correct in that it does matter on the person, because a lot of times what happens is I'll meet someone and they'll say, well, what do you do? And I'll tell them that I write. And they'll say, well, what do you write? And I said, well, science fiction and fantasy and urban fantasy and that kind of stuff. Oh, well, can you tell me something? You know, what would you recommend that I read? Then the first question out of your mouth is always, well, what do you like?
Mm-hmm.
What do you normally read? And 9 times out of 10, they'll say, I don't read anything. I don't really read that much. But I want to read. I want to get into something. And at that point, you know, I think Saga of the Seven Sons would destroy this person and they would never read anything again.
Well, it's kind of where I was coming from when I mentioned the Darwin Elevator, because, you know, like if you can find out kind of, like you said, what they're interested in, like somebody that likes The Walking Dead, they might like the Darwin Elevator because it has kind of a zombie element to it, or, you know, something like that, you know, that something that covers more than one. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
No, I get what you're trying to say. You're saying if they like the zombies, give them that because it has some zombie elements to it, but it also has some other stuff that might pull them in deeper.
Yes. That might point them towards other titles and get them to,
like,
yeah.
The Passage by Justin Cronin is total twist on the zombie thing. It's horror and it just spreads everywhere. But you know,
Sarah,
The Walking Dead, there you go.
That was so good for me until they skipped like hundreds of years into the future. And then I was like, no. I want to pick it back up, but I was like, I put it down. It's not that it was bad. I was just like, no, I want to go back to that and just be that the whole book. No, sorry, I just had to throw that out there.
No,
you're fine.
Yeah, and I get where you're coming from, and I understand. And Paul, I think it does matter who the person is and what they're into. You know, I have people in my family who they just think science fiction. Their very term for it is, well, that's just space shit.
Yes.
And they're not interested in it.
Well, that's how I used to feel about it. I mean, a long time ago. So I absolutely know exactly where they're coming from on that. It can be intimidating. And when you hear somebody that is able to talk about that science, I mean, God, my husband, ugh. so, you know, I enjoy science, but,
you know, just once, that's what I want to hear on Wheel of Fortune. It's like, so are you married? Yes, to my husband. Ugh.
Where sci-fi is concerned, because he reads a lot of very hard, you know, hard sci-fi. And It can be intimidating, and it's too bad because I would like to try. I may never be able to read it, but I'd like to try. And I think there's books that have at least opened me up to trying, you know, and that's the important thing, I think.
Okay. So let's do some final thoughts here. Final thoughts, Paul.
Yep. No, ask your target audience what they read, what they watch, what they listen to, and then you can, if you are any sort of experienced genre reader, be able to point them towards any number of entry points into this beloved genre of ours. Go science fiction.
Very cool. Sarah?
Oh, crap. I don't have a profound thought.
I just did my closing.
I don't have profound thoughts. I just really don't want people to pigeonhole science fiction. It's such a broad genre. There's something in here for everybody. So just... Yeah. spread your wings and fly, little birdies, fly. So there you go.
So, Kristen, you don't want a final thought? You already had yours?
Well, kind of. As Paul was saying, you know, direct them. You should be able to direct them. Or we could direct them towards people like Paul.
Yeah, there you go. Our encyclopedia.
Or Patrick, or Seth, or Sarah, or John, you know. I know. No, he's right. I'm going with Paul.
You mentioned John, and you can't send people to John DiNardo for book suggestions because he'll just point you to the blog, to the Books Received page, and say, anything here is awesome.
Or to his Carcass column.
And then if you read it, he'll say, oh, you bastard, I wanted to read that.
That's what he says to me. Yes.
Every time he gets a book review on the site, oh, I wanted to read that.
I know. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Jeff?
I will close with something that could possibly be a seed for a future discussion, and that's the fact that I think more and more contemporary SF, especially from the last decade, has not necessarily gone out of its way, but certainly managed to be more accessible than stuff from the 90s and before that. And I think a lot of that is technology. And I think a lot of that is the fact that there's a generation that's actually seen communications, you know, paradigms alter so much. And I think that I am not as well versed in a lot of the recent stuff from the last 5 to 10 years as I'd like to be. But I think that would hold up if I was to dig into it a little bit.
I'm going to throw one more thing out there. If you, as the suggestee, suggestor. If you're the person suggesting the book and you are passionate about it and you can't stop gushing about it, that really transfers to the other person. Then that gets them excited and they really want to read the book. So I think that plays a big part in it. You know what? I did want to mention we give DiNardo a lot of crap. But that's only because we've all seen the picture after a weekend bender of him half naked on the couch, spread, you know, schmear on his face,
I
bagels
seen
everywhere.
That picture. Can I see that picture?
Yeah, it's.
Can you
bad.
Send me that picture?
Yeah, it's bad. You know, there's lox, there's bagels. I mean, it's just, it's not good.
I feel like I'm the only one that hasn't seen that picture.
Yeah, apparently.
So, is lox even legal in Texas?
I think so, yes. But you have to ship it in, and it comes over the border. So,
yeah. Ours are a little subpar in these parts.
I also want to throw out there, this is still April. I will be at Pikes Peak Writers. So if anybody's in the area and you want to come learn about Scrivener, come to the Pikes Peak Writers Conference. I'll be there. So will Gail. So will Chuck Wendig. So will Jim C.
You
Hines.
Flying me out, Patrick?
Hey, you can fly out.
No. That's not what...
To answer your question, yes, absolutely, you can fly out. I don't have a problem with that.
No.
You can even drive from, say, Utah.
I need somebody to fund
my trip. Yeah, except you'd have to pay for my gas, so where's the money?
Well, could you road trip all of us? Just all of us do just get into one small, very small car.
Uh-huh.
Hey, Patrick, speaking of driving to neighboring states, are you going to come to WesterCon in July, or are you all talk and no action?
I don't know. What's WesterCon? Tell me about WesterCon.
WesterCon is a big convention. I guess they go all over the western part of the United States, and this year it is in Salt Lake.
Hmm. I have not
They're
heard
having,
it
like, Cory Doctorow, Mary Robinette Cowell, Brandon Sanderson, of course, because he lives here. Dan Wells, a few others are coming.
And just so you know, it's Kowal.
Whatever.
She corrected me.
Look,
I'm just telling you.
I'm a reader. I'm not a
Romeo,
talker.
Romeo,
if these people want me to say their names right, they'll record them and put a play button in their books.
Send your hate mail too.
If you listen through the end of this podcast, you will hear Mary Robinette Kowal. She's part of the trailing end thing now. I don't know. Send me a link and I'll take a look at it and see what we can do.
All right. Yeah, I'll send you a link. It's just we're neighbors kind of, so
very cool.
Why not?
Why not? Yes. And then of course you'll reciprocate and come to Mile High Con in October.
I would love to.
Yeah.
I've been trying to get out there for years.
All righty. Well, I'm going to let everybody go. Thanks for coming on. Check the show notes. There might even be some book lists there. You never know. It depends on how I feel. And I encourage our listeners to go and leave comments telling us what they think we got wrong, because we know that Tam's going to do that, going to get on there and tell us what we did. Fred's going to get on there and say, well, I can't believe you forgot this one, this one, this one, and this one. So I encourage people to go do that.
Only let us do three.
Exactly. The rest you have to put in comments. Thanks, everybody.
Good night. Patrick.
Night.
Thank you for listening to the SF Signal podcast. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the link to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com, and you can also search SF Signal in iTunes to find the feed. To comment about this or any of our podcast episodes, please call our voicemail line at 720-277-9082. If you enjoyed this podcast, help us boost the signal by telling your friends. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melts featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SFNF field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, new author spotlights, movie reviews, videos, science fiction, fantasy, and horror tidbits, free fiction roundups, and the new genre-related crowdfunding roundups. Click the RSS button in the sidebar to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
Wah, wah. Thinking and crap.
And scene.